You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey, welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Thank you for being here. We really do appreciate it. Today we are discussing the view from Eastern Europe. Listener Anna is a listener of the program, and she and I have had a lot of conversations over the last month about everything that's going on, and I thought it'd be interesting for people to hear her perspective. You know, Americans have never been invaded. We've been at war, but we've not been in the war, right? In the same way that a lot of our friends in the Balkans and the Baltic states have been, and Ukraine. And she has a different point of view about Vladimir Putin and Russia and America that I think would be an interesting thing for many of you to hear. So, tune in now and stay tuned right after these messages.
Warning. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent, libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program. Again, my name is Chris Spangle. Sorry for the weird voice. Allergies. Allergies have started here in central Indiana, and I'm dying. Thank you for being here. Like I said, we're going to talk about the view from Eastern Europe, about the war in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine. Weirdly, Ukraine has become a 51st state. If you watch the mainstream media or politicians, but we always begin every program by thanking our patrons, members of Wall Plus, WAL Plus. Join wallplus.com. You get all kinds of great benefits. First and foremost, a new show every week, Wednesday nights. They've been averaging 30 to 50 minutes. You can tune in at the $5 level, and if you're at the $10 level, you get to join in. So please go. We've got an extra show every week now just for our patrons, and it helps us immensely. Well, quite frankly, like I've said, I want to do this full time. And to do that full time means I've got to make up income I'd lose from leaving a full time job. So we need you to join Wall Plus right now and increase the amount of content. Man, I have like 10 shows in my head that I want to plot out, but I just don't have time. So I'd love to have the time to do that. And, you know, greater assistance for our network hosts like our buddy Hody Johns. Hody is one of the best human beings alive, and he hosts Enemy of My Enemy over on the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network, of which we are a part. See all of the programs right now at wearelibertarians.com. Thank you especially to our members. It's funny, Jason Doolittle said that, I know that I'm last because you must have put these in order of those who joined, and that's exactly right. Our $100 a month members of Wall Plus, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Reinhold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. As you can see, that list of $100 folks has gotten a little smaller as things, and so we really need you to help make up that. Times are getting tough around here at the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network at a time we're desperately needed to expand our efforts in being a common sense news source that is trying to break down all these narratives. Listen, I've talked to a lot of you over the last couple months. Everybody doesn't know what to believe and everybody's really confused. And what we're trying to do is help sort some of that stuff out. And so join Wall Plus. There's our buddy Dion Curry, co-host of the Pat Down with me and Miss Pat. Also, you know, one of the best guys that I know, and I really appreciate him. And make sure you go check out Now That's Debatable, which is a fun show. All right, enough of all this shameless self-promotion. Let's get on with the program. Joining us is Harry Price. Harry, please say hello. You're all going to have to unmute yourselves. You know, if you join Wall Plus, then maybe we will become professionals if we have a little bit more income here at the network.
I think it's my fault. I think I was that when I was moving my screens around so I could like make sure I can model the chats and stuff like that. So I apologize for that.
To emphasize the losing those $100 men, the three or four of them, I'm having to use Scott's toilet paper not only for my behind but also on my nose. That's how. Listen, please join our Patreon. Help me buy Kleenex again.
Yeah, but like I'm doing pretty well over the last few weeks. I know like the whole low-key wall crew has been hit by the CIA like a cold gun in like the last few weeks, which stinks.
What,
everyone except Ryan, everyone except Reinhold. So like I'd be careful, sick. Reinhold.
I didn't get COVID. I don't get sick very often. It's hard to get sick when you don't leave the house ever.
Yeah, right. No human contact helps. All right, Anna. I think we first became acquaintances through the pat down, and you're a pat down crack baby.
Yeah.
And then you started listening to this show, right?
Yeah. So I'm a crack baby for 2 years now, at least. I've seen Miss Pat on the Breakfast Show Club. So I looked up her podcast. Of course, she's hilarious. She's easy to get into. So that's how I came to find out about you, Chris, and Dion. I befriended you on Facebook, so I started watching your individual podcasts. So
here awesome. We are.
So I started commenting on the, especially on the war, as the war of Ukraine started, I started commenting on your posts, especially since once you asked me, I got a package from Russia. You're Russian, right? And I insisted, no, my surname doesn't necessarily mean I'm Russian. Quite the opposite. I know little about Russia.
No, you have a funny accent, and you're over there. So to Americans, it's like do you all get like Canadians and Americans confused in Eastern Europe?
Well, I used to, but now I think I can tell. I couldn't tell apart Australian from American, let alone Canadian from American. But now, listening to so much podcasts and listening to so much TV, Netflix, I think that I'm onto it.
So I'm just going to warn you, Anna, we are not trying to be ugly Americans. We are ugly Americans, which for those of you who don't know that term, it is a book, basically an old book about Americans who go abroad and act stupidly without just in total ignorance of cultural differences and not seemingly caring about cultural differences. Everybody's a foreigner to us. So I was like, you're the closest person to a Russian that I knew at that point. And I've since expanded my network of people into Russia. And I know that where you live is not Russia. It wasn't even part of the Soviet republics. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, but we do apologize in advance. We're trying to learn here. So I'm going to ask, and these two idiots will ask a lot of stupid, ugly American questions of you. That's part of what this episode is about. So tell us where you live and, where, you know, and a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So please do not apologize. This is the time to address the burning question. Questions, the ugly American questions, as you tell them. So please don't hold back. I'll try to clear up some of the misconceptions I have. So I'm from Macedonia, which is recently been renamed North Macedonia. I'm from the Balkans, that is former Yugoslavia. So to give you a little bit a clearer picture where that is north of Greece. So most people know where Greece is, right?
Where the boot of Italy is kicking Albania, which then you're next to Albanian.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
South of Kosovo, so, north of Greece.
Yes. So it's Europe is like, it's strangely close, but at the same time, it's so far away. So when I would travel somewhere in Europe, they always shout at me, European, no, get back in the line or go back left. So I'm like, I'm made aware that I'm not European. What is interesting is that in the Balkans, a lot of people that are on the physical peninsula don't feel they are Balkans themselves, like the Greeks or the Croatians that are already in the European Union and NATO and are westernized, Europeanized. So Europeanized is a synonym for being cultured, being like a pretty evolved human. That is synonym for European. So a lot of them
we talk a lot about American racism, but just from watching the last month, Europeans seem more racist than we are. Like, so why like when a France person or a German or I don't know what you call a France person or
French.
I mean French are the most haughty, right? Like, and then they considered the English forever and probably still do, like, you know, the white trash cousins of the North. But what is the distinction? So I know on the Balkans, for instance, you've got Croatia and Serbia, and you've got, you know, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and you've got the wars within your own peninsula there. Then you've got the Western Europeans like France, Germany, UK. Like, why are you called out when you go to places like France as being less than European? What's that about?
Well, for once, there is a pass when you're on the passport control. Europeans can just walk in and without showing no passports, no IDs, they just walk in, and we are stopped. And I remember it being even uglier, like back in the day when people would, like, if you are from Hungary, everybody out the train, it was like you would get patted down. It was like, you were singled out. And to the point of racism, I've mentioned a few times that, like, 40 miles from my house, there is an American base, military base. And so we have a lot of Americans here. And I started realizing at one point, we are not white. And nobody could grasp that, because people don't think about race, or they don't think that they think about race.
Now, hold on, Anna. Harry, let's just zoom in here on Anna. Harry, what do you think?
I'm going to have to go. Yeah, I'm going to have to go white.
What do you mean by that? Like, because to Americans who have a much more... much more like clear racial boundaries. Like, I think America has so many different cultures in it. In Europe,
well, I've
talked to a lot of pat down, a couple pat down people. Like, one said to me, "This is just a war against white people. I don't really care." I was like, "Well, that's not cool." Like, so but I didn't understand that mentality. So, like, when you say you're not considered white, who is white? And why are you not white?
Well,
because to Americans, that sounds silly.
We were really confused hearing it, but you gotta understand, and that's why maybe you should lean into the critical race theory thing. It's the main point of it is race is a social construct, right? Because an Indian person can be dark-skinned. Or even a Greek person can be dark-skinned just as much an African person, or can have a curly or nappy hair. So that isn't the identifying marker which makes you, like, dark-skinned or curly hair, black. What they mean, I guess, is being here, is they see the mosques, the Muslims, the culture, and that's why they don't identify it as being... European, like they've seen in Germany, in Italy, they don't see mosques there. They have
so that's Muslims the there. So we've seen the reaction. Like, you look at the reaction to Lukashenko importing people from Syria into Belarus on purpose, as a way to basically, like, refugee warfare, putting them on the border with Poland. Poland, like, using the military to force Syrians and Iraqis back. Like, they don't want, the European Union does not want Muslim refugees coming in because they view it.
What is going on? Does it end up in the news?
No.
What's going on with the refugees?
No. There are rivers of refugees
right. from Africa and the Middle East. Like you, I cannot even explain. Those are like hundreds, if not millions, by this point. And in Italy, it's forbidden for you to help out a refugee.
Wow!
So if you see refugees drowning, you cannot help them and bring them ashore.
What?
They are literally walking on the beaches in Spain, like because they're going from Libya, from northern Africa, and they're going with like sometimes with dinghy boats. If it's not the distance, it's not too big. So they like refugees walk out on beaches while people are vacationing. And that is why at this point, they paid out Turkey. So Turkey is taking, they give them probably billions of dollars. So they take in the Muslims and the Africans. So they stay there until the thing is resolved. And most of the Middle Eastern and African refugees ended up in Germany, Sweden, and the UK. UK put up a real fight with it. And in Italy, there are a lot of Africans. Like I've been in Italy like maybe 10, 15 years ago, and then 2 years ago, and I was really shocked. Maybe it's pretty diverse, and I was really shocked how diverse it was. I didn't remember it that way. So that's why it's always a threat to like to direct Middle Easterners to like, to Europe, because it completely debalances the whole fabric of their society. They will have to learn to integrate them. There's no escaping it, especially the African ones, where they have their colonies to this day.
Well, which is like America. A lot of what's happened is the right in Europe, their thinking has infected the right of America and has become very anti-immigration. And America's the kind of culture that can help and accept immigrants. We're all from immigrants. Like, you know, we don't have like if where you're at, you know, the dissolution of Yugoslavia was, you know, the term Balkanization partly means like the breakup of a country into, you know, cultural factions. Like, we don't have the same kind of like Croats, Bosnians, Serbians, Macedonians, Greeks, like all living like it would be like Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Illinois having like these great cultural distinctions, but we don't have that. So we don't quite understand it, and so we look at like the there is talk about hold on, Anna. There is talk about like the differences between how Poland is accepting their Ukrainian neighbors and how they're treating, you know, like we have to be honest about these refugees. We caused it. Right? Like it is because of our wars and the West's wars in the Middle East. And then we want to say, no, you can't come in here. In Syria, 50% of the country left Syria due to the Syrian wars, and then they've been caught in no man's land for 10 years. So it's really a black mark on the West for sure. But we are confused in general about why Europe, like to us, why wouldn't, I mean, Germany's the most welcoming towards refugees of the country, but there's such anger over it that a lot of us in America don't get it because we, you know, our airport has a Muslim prayer room and, you know, like it's just part of our culture. I grew up in a city that's 2% Muslim and 98% white, but, you know, hopefully they weren't treated all that differently. But obviously America does have its issues with race, as we've talked about. But so, you know, when you talk about, you and I talked about Yugoslavia, maybe you can explain what Yugoslavia was. And, you know, you're around our age, you know, you're so like in 91, I was in first grade. That's when your country was formed.
Yeah, I was a kid when it fell apart, but I remember I remember a lot of it because it's hard not to remember it. For example, Ceausescu, that was in Yugoslavia, but it, of course, we were glued to the TVs as the Eastern Bloc started falling apart. So
who,
first,
can you explain who Ceausescu was?
The Ceausescu was the president, like dictator, president of Romania. So he was caught. There was unrest throughout Eastern Europe. Balkan isn't part of the Eastern Europe. It's Southeastern. So he was caught. They measured his, they took his blood pressure and they shot him. So that was on TV. And as a kid, you see that, you are stunned. You've never seen a live execution before. And the next day, the teacher comes in with press clippings and tries to explain to you what happened and how this doesn't affect what's going on here. But it did, of course, it did affect it. Yugoslavia started breaking apart. So now it's becoming clear what was going on. Serbia, which is like a satellite republic of Russia, much like Belarus, first started going at Croatia. They had like maybe 1 or 2 year war. Then they proceeded, and the Croatians are Catholics. So Serbs are Orthodox Christians like the Russians, and the Croatian are Catholics. So they proceeded going south to Bosnia. Bosnia is even more complex. It's 30% Muslim, 30% Catholic, and then the rest is mixed or Orthodox. So that was a civil war, which was, I cannot explain how bloody it was. It was beyond description. Some of it is on YouTube, but I wouldn't recommend it. This also happened on our TVs. Like, I remember vividly, even though I was a kid, the newscaster ducking, like, all of a sudden.
Now, may I ask, like, how far, like, if you were to drive to that area of where that war was, how long would the drive be?
It's 400 miles to Belgrade. It's like, I would take like 10 hours with the bus.
All right, so basically like a war happening in Florida for Hoosiers, essentially. So I'm just trying to give people some perspective of how close you were to this stuff.
Yeah, they're like our neighboring country. One, like, Serbia is our north neighboring country. The border is a half-hour drive.
And that's Bosnia. Borders with Kosovo, right? Kosovo had its own war, which America and NATO intervened in.
Yeah, that solidified. They solidified everything, and to this day it hounds them. So then Serbia proceeded to Kosovo. Bill Clinton was at the time was president of America. So they said, okay, this cannot happen over and over again to Macedonia. That is another decade of wars. So this is unattainable. And so they sent out planes. And I remember the planes flying over and I had panic attacks. I know that they weren't meant for me, but we knew we were in some kind of danger. We just didn't know where from. And it ended pretty quickly, maybe in weeks. And Kosovo got their own country. Americans rule practically Kosovo at the moment. And
still? Now?
Yeah. I told you Hillary Clinton has a statue there. The American flags are stated all around the place because they feel they owe their country to you.
Really?
Yeah. Albanians love you.
Albanians love us. Cool. All right. Yeah. So just to like add another layer to this, you know, Yugoslavia is this country that basically flirted with, you know, the USSR and then eventually rejected it. It was a socialist country. It had, you know, Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Macedonia, you know, all these different countries within it. They had a rotating presidential thing. Slobodan Milosevic, who was aligned with Russia, was originally seen to be this, and they were on the eastern side, and he was supposed to be like this reformer, but then he ends up becoming a brutal dictator. There's two separate groups within Serbia in the north and then south in Kosovo. And he wanted to reduce the influence of other foreign powers in those places. He invades them. He basically starts committing genocide, and the United States and NATO intervene in Kosovo to stop the genocide from taking place because hundreds of thousands of people were being killed. And yeah. So it was a peacekeeping mission with the UN. So, you know, there was also over in other places, different warring factions. So you have all these different states in the Balkans through the 90s as the USSR is breaking down. And it comes down to what a lot of the conversation is now is just fears of influence, right? So Putin gave this speech in 2007 to the Munich Security Council with John McCain sitting in the front row, just fuming, basically saying spheres of influence exist. And this is really great power politics and how most of the world has worked for as long as history. You know, we have been living in a rare time over the last 20, 30 years where the United States was the sole superpower and great power politics didn't exist. And that's what Putin is trying to reestablish, is great power politics. And so the Soviet Union and America had these spheres of influence that would come into countries and say, well, they're the bad guy. We're here to liberate you and keep you from that bad guy harming you. And, you know, for Putin, the way that he views this is that his spheres of influence are the countries on his border, the former Warsaw Pact countries like Poland, like Ukraine, like Belarus. He has the right to have the sphere of influence, much the same way that Americans view that the Western Hemisphere is their sphere of influence. Like, we are responsible for keeping in line all of these South American and Central American countries. And it's very much an imperialist mindset. and in Europe, these European countries say, well, Putin clearly poses a danger, which... Like, if you look at Chechnya, he clearly posed a danger to that. That country wanted to secede. He said no and started a brutal war to keep them from seceding. And in the Balkans and these Eastern European border states, there's been a power competition for the sphere of influence within these governments between NATO and the European powers and the United States, what's called the West collectively, and Russia. Because Vladimir Putin wants to have control, much like Belarus. You'll have a strong man in Belarus, or in Ukraine, you'll have a Russian-aligned puppet in Ukraine, and then the Maidan protests come along and try to sweep him out of power and install someone who's more like Zelensky, who's more Western-aligned. Now, Anna, I mean, is that a fair summation of kind of how Eastern Europeans and I don't know if you consider yourself European at all, based on kind of what you said, but like you're definitely in, like you said, you have an American base near you, but you said Russians are trying to establish a base near you too. Like, was that a fair summation of kind of the power politics and the pull that your country feels?
Yeah. And now with what's going on in Ukraine, now it's clearer than ever that this is not just assumption or speculation. It's pretty much the jig is up. It's in the open. When Montenegro tried to enter NATO, they tried to destabilize the whole country, Russia, because Montenegro was very close to Serbia. So they thought, okay, this is a done deal. They're on our side. But then they switched sides. Same with Macedonia. So we had exactly the same scenario happening with what happened to you with the capital. The pro-Russian government, which was in power for maybe 12 years, for a whole decade.
In which country? They were
in Macedonia.
Okay.
So they were, that's like a, like they're following a tutorial, how to be an autocrat, like a mini Putin. You take over the media, you put people that are too loud or causing friction in jail. Like, you take hold control of everything. You earn billions of dollars on like shady deals. So a pro-Western leader, which he resigned because he was pissed at Europe when he lost the elections because he wouldn't get money and he would put his life in danger. So he gained momentum with some colorful revolution, so-called, similar to what happened in Maidan. And they stormed the parliament. We have a parliament. So there were Russian spies, Serbian spies, and then CIA or Americans saved the politicians, like the whole political all of the politicians that are in power were in the parliament that day because they were trying to form the government. So they swooped them away because they were about to be killed. Like it was crazy. And from that on, from that moment on, everybody kind of smartened up because the Europeans as well as Americans, they just left us be. For a while. Okay, you are, especially in the Obama years, they thought we are not going to be the world policeman. You are an independent country. You can do your own thing. But that isn't how things turned up to be. So Putin came in and playing Monopoly, he took over the Macedonian politics, the Montenegrin. Serbia will never be in NATO because NATO bombed Serbia, but they are trying to get into European Union. They are Russian allies, and I don't think that will ever change, even though their president said that he aged for 10 years this past 2 weeks because he is facing an immense pressure. He's probably made to choose sides.
Yeah, I watched this documentary, and I would recommend people look into Chechnya, because Chechnya was this country kind of south of Russia towards more Afghanistan, and it's called Chechnya War Without Trace, and it's on Tubi. And this is like the precursor. So they wanted to separate from Russian influence and go their own way. Putin as a new president. So Yeltsin, under a peacekeeping falsehood, basically in 1994, invades Chechnya, and the Russian way of war is to rubble a city, just destroy it till they give up, and then take it over and install a strongman puppet. And I forget the name of the guy who's in charge of Chechnya now. Maybe you know. And it's not Andropov. I'll look it up. But anyway,
they're fighting in Ukraine, right?
So yeah. So my point is that all these countries, like your country and Poland and all these other countries, had just elected pro-democratic, you know, anti-Russian sphere of influence politicians, and saw basically the war crimes that were being committed in Chechnya and said, we don't have the money for our own defense. We need your help. That's why the NATO expansion took place, was a reaction to what happened in Chechnya, because countries like Macedonia said, we don't have the ability to fight this. And so in all these different countries, you have what's called color revolutions, where these Putin puppets have been overthrown, you know, a decade after being, you know, installed. And that's where, if you see, oh, this is a CIA-backed coup, that's what people are talking about. And there is some truth to the fact that the United States is backing pro-democracy factions in countries that are seeing a color revolution and trying to fight for democracy. I guess it comes to, so Americans kind of see this in a flat way, right? Like America versus Russia, and we are very aware of our own sins and our own faults as a country. Like Iraq laid bare the militarism of the United States government and of Hillary Clinton and these other people. And so when we hear somebody like you say, we need your help, we kind of identify with Barack Obama going, well, we're not the world's policemen. We lost a lot in Iraq. It didn't work out. We saw Abu Ghraib. We saw these things. Like, it's not really our responsibility to help you fight the Russians, so be it. I mean, how do you view that? Like, how do you and a lot of your countrymen and women like view the United States? Because that's how we view ourselves, which is a militaristic country that doesn't want to go around policing the world and shouldn't have to. You all kind of agree with that? Like, do you see a moral equivalence between Russia and the United States in the way that we see? Because that's how we kind of see it, right or wrong.
There's like a strong divide, and this decade of pro Putin, everything pro Russia, and they don't have to explicitly say we love Putin and we are pro Russia, but the whole concept and the whole way of thinking is including how do you view America. So maybe half of them think, and I don't want to play with numbers, so I'll say one half of them think that Americans are this imperialistic, not just Americans, but Europe as well, the West, are these imperialistic colonizers that go around the world and terrorize people, steal their goods, the diamonds, the oil, the everything.
Let me say, a lot of that is absolutely true, but what Russian propaganda does is it takes those nuggets of truth, like the hospital bombing, and just repeats that and says, well, we get to do what we want because they did this.
And then the other half of the public, the people, are more, okay, we cannot be aligned with a madman like Putin. Like, we cannot live in a dictatorship. It's just non-attainable. It's not a good way to live. It's just not who we are and not who we are striving to be. And it's just morally wrong. So it's like butting heads. These two points are butting heads. And I think that that everybody, just like NATO united, it's the same with the media. Everybody woke up to the truth that you cannot play with propaganda. You cannot just write it off to freedom of speech and just let them be, because it will do so much harm.
The calculus changes when Russia invades a country and starts bombing hospitals and basically the largest country in Europe, and they start treating it like Chechnya and rubbling it. And I mean,
so where will they stop? Right.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I've heard this described as Europe's 9/11, and, you know, for a place like Macedonia, you're 9/11, where it no longer becomes like this. Which team are you going to pick? They're both bad options. To, oh, America's not invading Ukraine. Putin is invading Ukraine and killing children and bombing hospitals. So is that an accurate description? Like, and if so, like, what changed when Russia invaded Ukraine for Macedonians?
I was like, the morning when I woke up, I had this feeling the next day. I had this feeling like something horrible happened to me, like something personally horrible, like my life changed. That was the feeling I had, that nothing's gonna be the same, that we are in a state of danger, that our peace can be retrieved at any point, because the Ukrainians didn't, many of them didn't think that it will come to this. Like, this wasn't even in their wildest dreams. They knew that something might erupt, but not at this, like, at this level. So as far as Americans are, they think that you provoked it. Like, Russia had asked, has that, but not all, like some, Russia has asked you nicely, don't poke us, like, don't put NATO on our borders, just keep your distance, and you keep on refusing to do that and provoking them, so now they have to act. That's that point.
Where do you come down on that?
I come down on, even though things are complex and nothing is like black and white, there's a lot of gray area that maybe we're not aware of. Ukraine is an independent sovereign country that has its its rights and liberties to go into NATO or not go into NATO. And even if they don't see eye to eye on some things, this type of war is absolutely unacceptable. I don't know what to say. I'm dumbfounded. And again, where will they stop? They're obviously not to mention that Putin seems to be in some type of, he was always cool, calm and collected, but lately he's unhinged, as many of Americans say. That is pretty much correct. He seems uncalculated. You cannot know where he will go next. So that's a scary prospect and scary thing to see, because the NATO head Stoltenberg mentioned Romania. Also, your president. They mentioned Bosnia. They're sending troops to Bosnia, trying to strengthen them, and Georgia in Asia. So,
and how do Macedonians and you yourself feel about Americans starting to put troops into these countries? Like, do you resent the fact that there's an American base in your country?
No, not at all. It's in Kosovo. It's not in my country, but it's really close to the border. And the Americans have a huge embassy. Like, it has underground. It's a strategic. It's a really important strategic place. It's obviously somewhere between the West and the East, and that's why they positioned themselves here. But I don't resent it at all. I feel it as reinforcing and stabilizing force, not the opposite way around, because we've seen Americans, unlike Europeans, and I've been banned on Facebook from saying that, this Americans have been proactive. Every time something happens, Americans come in and try to restore it. They've always been respectful. They've always held their word, but the Europeans are like, we can't be bothered, but I think they've been snapped out of it. They just like their nice life, which is luxurious and it's with nice standard. But this change, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed in a big way in Europe, European capitals. In some ways, Biden has not been proactive in a lot of this, which... You know, I'm when wars are starting, me personally, Anna, I'm okay with our president taking a nap. But it sounds like you might not totally agree with that.
I mean, I've heard that he has senior moments, but maybe just because I want him to do good, so I'm writing these things to him, like, he's not antagonizing Putin. He's not escalating the situation even more with maybe closing the sky, as Ukrainians say. So I wouldn't know. I just know what I see on the news from time to time. The first thing when I heard that Putin invaded Ukraine, the first thing I thought was, what did Joe do? They had bilateral talks, and I thought he did something to provoke this. But of course, it wasn't as simple as that.
Yeah, I had
a lot of talks.
There's definitely no doubt that the Americans are provocative, Reinhold. I mean, but when you look at Chechnya, and if Chechnya is the guide, where Putin will make an entire population submit and install a Ramzan Kadyrov. Kadyrov is this dictator who basically took over for his dad. He's head of a major tribe there, for lack of a better word. And he has systematically shut down the press. He jails. It's what we're seeing in Russia, basically. The systematic shutting down of the press. The last vestiges of free press and free speech in Russia were shut down over the last month. You see this rally with Vladimir Putin holding a pro-war rally, saying we're only there as a peacekeeping mission to liberate them from genocide. And I think anyone with a brain that is watching images on television that isn't just completely in a stream of Russian propaganda in this country sees that the genocide that's taking place now is one way, and it's not from these Nazis that are so insignificant in that country that they couldn't even win. If the country was taken over by Nazis, would they have not won more than zero seats in elections for the parliament in Ukraine? Like, this Nazi thing is absolutely true. Neo-Nazis do absolutely exist in this country, but it isn't at the level that Russia's propaganda makes it out to be, including a lot of libertarian news outlets, I'm sorry to say. But those neo-Nazi factions exist in every country. ADM in Germany and Le Pen's party have neo-Nazi elements in their country. And guess who funds them? Russia. So it's kind of insane that they, you know, claim one thing and say the other. So the idea that... I just look at Reinhold, kind of the moral equivalence between America and Russia in terms of foreign policy. I mean, we have what responsibility do we have? I think we have a responsibility to stop funding the war in Yemen, stop sending, you know, bombs into Yemen and provoking literal genocides. And I think we have, I think the NATO expansion thing, it's sort of like removing agency from Vladimir Putin as if he's just like some wild bear. Like, Vladimir Putin is just this wild bear that can be provoked by American decision-making because he has no agency on his own. Like, this is a man who, maybe he's gone bonkers, but I think has been very consistent. Like Osama bin Laden said, if you continue to do this, I will do this. He's never lied. He's been very honest. But he probably was going to do it no matter what. Right? Like, he was going to invade Ukraine no matter what, because he's been saying it for 22 years. And that's why NATO never allowed Ukraine to join, because they knew he was going to do it and didn't want to actually fight on their behalf. But I think that NATO expansion and America's sins are incomplete explanations in terms of where we're at.
And definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's... He's been talking about reunifying Russia and making Russia what it used to be for years. And this is just the first step. He's already made comments about other countries. He's talking about Kosovo and things like that. Other countries where once he's done in Ukraine, he's going to go try and get those countries on his side, too. The ironic thing is that his actions, the way he did it, without trying to gain any consensus or any support from anybody.
Yeah, he should have done what America did and lied to the world community. He didn't lie in the right way, in the right channels, to actually get his war like America did in Iraq.
Right. He didn't have any support at all, so now the whole world is turning against him. And all these countries in Eastern Europe who were on the fence on whether to join NATO, not join NATO, stay with Russia, trying to do a balancing act between the two countries to have trade and good relations with both, are starting to just go, hey, can we join NATO now? You know, I mean, there's several of them that are doing that. So, you know, I think it backfired on him, to be honest with you. I mean, if he had succeeded and rolled through Ukraine in 2 days, you know, maybe it's a different story, but he didn't. It's been an abject failure, in my opinion, on everything he's done.
Yeah, Anna, does the fact that the Russian military suck complete ass, does that give you any comfort?
Oh yeah, it's not only comforting, it's also very pleasurable, and it feels like the good guy when in the movie the good guy wins. Like, that's sort of, but I don't want to be overly hopeful. Like, also I try to remember, those are, by all accounts, those are kids that some of them weren't even told they were going to war, but they were going training, or they have no clue where they ended up. And so that's the humane, as always, side of it. But for now, it seems pretty promising that the Ukrainians might actually pull it off. Like, they might even win it. They might even win it, and it won't drag out. It's, at this point, it seems like that. They don't have manpower. They are demotivated. Again, from what I've read and seen, the terrain is hostile. People aren't helping them. they cannot rest, they cannot maintain the weapons and the vehicles. So, but that also makes them even more aggressive. There's this story about Putin that everybody, the mouse story. Have you heard it?
No.
That's when he was a kid, he saw a that when a mouse was put in the corner, a rat was, it was becoming really aggressive. And so that saved its life. And that was a great lesson, apparently, he learned.
Yeah,
so everybody keeps repeating this story, like, be careful, if you put him in corner, he might lash out.
He, when he was a kid, the reason he's into judo is that he lived in this very tough neighborhood. Like, Leningrad, where he grew up, was absolutely destroyed, starved by the Nazis, and was... there's a book called The... It's by Masha Gessen, The Man with No Face, I think it is. I'm about 70% through it, and it's really good. It's really interesting, kind of his background, but he would get into fights every single day. He would fight. He was not pro-communist. He wouldn't wear like the red bandana that all the other communist kids would, so they'd pick on him and beat him up. And so he learned judo as self-defense. So he, you know, he's just got this mentality. I think Americans understand, if they have a clear view of who Trump is and don't view him as like some sort of moral good and savior, you really have, I think, a clear picture of how Putin thinks too in a lot of ways. Like, I'm not going to lose. There's no circumstances in which I will lose. And he can't walk away from the Ukrainian war at this point because, you know, the West has decimated their finances to the point that he's temporarily jailing the oligarchs for a reason and murdering ones that are over in Britain for a reason, because there's no way out for him. He is kind of cornered. And so will he use nuclear weapons that are I don't buy the idea. Like, I think there's a lot of fear mongering that this guy, if we go too far, he's going to use nukes and Chicago will get nuked. Like, I mean, when it comes to nuclear weapons and Putin using them, like, how do you view that? How do people in Eastern Europe think of it?
Well, probably we still haven't gone as far about nukes. I don't think so. I haven't witnessed too many conversations about that. But if what you're saying, I don't know his extensive biography. I only tried to get sense of who he is these past few weeks. But if he's used to being the underdog his whole life and he thrives of it, some people are like that, like you tell them they can do it and they'll do everything to prove you wrong. And I hope that he won't have to prove that he's going to do what he says he's going to do. Because with Ukraine, it was the same thing. Like, no, that can happen, not at this point. That's completely irrational to be thinking like that. And then he did it. And at least where I'm standing from, that's what I was thinking. So with the nukes, I know that he probably doesn't want to resort to it. But who knows what he's capable of. If he thinks he has nothing to live for, like there's no options for him, like other than jail or death or exile, who knows if he's willing to take down the whole world with him. I don't know, but again, even more so, the fact that the Russian military doesn't seem to be as modernized, as like they haven't been tried as much in modern capacity. That also is kind of, I don't know how nukes work, but for some reason that also gives me some level of comfort.
So what would you like America to do, and what do a lot of people in your country and your region of the world, like, what really do they want from America and its government?
Right, in the Ukraine scenario? Or
that and for their own personal, so give us both.
Both personal, I would say if they remain being as involved, because we've built everything under the assumption and under the guarantees that we have this presence that is, again, stabilizing. You probably give a lot of money with the infrastructure and probably projects. So if you pull the rug underneath us, that won't probably be good here or anywhere. And I also want you to know that you're not an isolated island that is completely disconnected from the world. Because I've heard people say, we don't have any Americans, don't have anything to do with Ukraine. Why are we getting involved? Why are we sending money? And obviously, it's not like that. I mean, to me, at least, it's obvious, because you've said it's power politics, right? You've been involved in that level of politics, involved in the world, again, since forever. And of course you are involved.
So long story short, keep your promises of security guarantees and don't just throw you to the wolves. Is that a good
summation? Yeah, at this point, yes. That would be... but I have every belief that... there's no reason for me to believe that's not going to be like that.
Do you trust America to fulfill those promises?
Well,
that's good enough. You can stop there. We heard you. No, go ahead and finish the thought. Like,
depends what America is. Again, Bush was a really good friend of Macedonia. Like, he loved us. Like, he made such gestures that he didn't have to do. He came here. He came over. Like, and I've seen that after he left the presidency, a lot of his colleague politicians that loved him as well for that, like, very hearty, very, like, people person. Obama, he was very intellectual, also very beloved, but he pulled back a little bit. And in those years, that's what allowed Putin to come in this region and grab a hold of it. Trump, so it depends what America is at the moment, in short.
Yeah, right, bipolar. So believe me, we're all tired of it too. It sounds like if America is unstable, then it sounds like your region is unstable too. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If you feel Ukraine, if you're... occupied with what's going on in Ukraine, you can imagine the leader of the free world, what effect does it have? Because Europe surely isn't that. Like, they're really sleepy and really, but I think that it's a wake-up call for everybody that things won't just happen on themselves.
Harry, Europe is low-T is what I'm hearing from her.
Very low, very low T. And it just also shows, like, you know, Europe kind of sucks, you know. It's just half the reason why, like, England got the heck out of the EU, you know. Come on, you know, they've shamed everyone for doing any world policing but won't do any of their own, you know. They're completely shameful of it.
So like, do you consider the base in Kosovo, is that world policing? Like, like, where in your view, like, where's the line between fulfilling the promise and being proactive and going too far, like, the, you know, the difference between what does that look like? Because to us, we're Americans are maximalist. We're gonna go in and put boots on the ground, do a no fly zone, or we're gonna never talk to any country unless that's trade, right? Like, there's no real in between. So, like, what does that look like to people in your region?
Well, the day when Ukraine got invaded, people from Kosovo on an official level asked the Americans to make the base permanent, like, to be a permanent fixture. So it has its own function that is beyond just a base. And I told you, I've seen not only soldiers, but people who work there as contractors. And many of them actually got married here, live here. So they're ingrained in the society. And So talk to them when I used to be on Tinder. So where, how long?
Yeah. Have you ever dated an American soldier? Let's hear it. Let's stop there. Let's skip the important stuff.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
he's back in America, and he has a kid, but he's a real good friend. He's like perfect gentleman.
Very nice. Good. We're glad to hear that, you know, international relations are going well. So back to like the, you know, what does fulfilling that promise that you would like to see America keep? What does that look like versus, oh God, what did Joe do now?
What is the keeping of the promise? Again, just be the stabilizing, like just be the ideals you uphold. I know that within your society, you would want that for yourselves, right? Mm-hmm. But if that promise can be made, if it's a promise or a guarantee worldwide and not just flip at one moment, and that would be really nice. Like that's the most you can ask for, actually.
Boy, Reinhold, is she fucked. Just kidding.
People will go after my, it's really, you really need to know that, things would be much worse at some point. Like what the Balkans was in the 90s, that is the Balkans left to its own devices in its some tribal wars. And
So you're saying without that American base and the promise to keep the peace through that base, your entire
base, I don't think the base does the peacekeeping.
Okay.
They just sent off the soldiers to Bulgaria or used to Ukraine. They're doing soldier things, right? But
like on Tinder. forgive me for being ignorant of what's happening in my own country, but I'm curious, like, so when soldiers leave that base and go do soldier things in various countries within the Balkans, what does that look like? What are they doing?
Well, for one, they used to get drunk. They used to cause fights. So now that's over. And they have to write down every time they leave the base, where are you going? Give me the name, the address, the phone number. Like you make an application to have a date. And
No, I'm not saying what are the bad things, but like, you know, how are Americans keeping the peace in the Balkans?
It's just diplomacy. The soldiers, they like quite literally, they're doing soldier things. They're doing military exercises. They fly the choppers. They, you know, military life.
But it's not like, but it's not like, you know, we're invading people's homes and helping the American government shut down foreign media. Right.
No. It's mostly training, because we're giving military weapons and things like that, you know, helicopters and planes and anti-tank weapons, things like that, to these people to help them defend themselves. But they need trained on that equipment too. So, and there's military stuff that we can teach them, because we've had a lot of experience with military stuff and fighting wars. So, you know, we're just passing on that to help them protect themselves, it sounds like to me. But
Dion says, Anna, as a black American, don't trust them motherfuckers.
Yeah, he was black, so.
He was? Oh, there you go. Dion also said she has a drone flying over her house. That's why he's a perfect gentleman. And they stopped getting drunk, Chris. That's how they're keeping the peace. It's like, well, I think
the
this
peacekeeping
is
within diplomacy. That's the main thing.
Yeah, I appreciate your view. I mean, I would open it up to you to, you know, any final thoughts, like kind of give us a summation and, you know, and if you I know you're starting a podcast, please tell us where we can follow you.
Yeah, well, it's in Macedonia, so there's that at this point. So as soon as I started running, then I'll think about switching internationally. But yeah, my Facebook profile, and I have a site, and I just did the pilot episode. So I'm starting it off. Yeah, I won't torture you through the name because it's not in English.
All right. Well, look, Anna, A-N-A, C-H-U, S-H-K-O-V-A, if you want to go find her Facebook profile. Give us your final thoughts. Like, you know, you have millions and millions of Americans listening. What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, don't lash out at what's going on in Ukraine at the moment. Like, we deserve those funds and that attention as well, because it is really tied to you in a way. So
in what way? And how does it really affect us?
Well, the international policy, let's not talk resources. I really didn't want to go there. The natural resources that you have access or don't access to. Germany, for example, lost its main source to gas because of the sanctions with Russia, and it had to be in solidarity to the Americans.
So in a sense, you're arguing to Americans, and especially libertarians like us, like, your economic situation is tied into global security and peace.
Well, it's just like what COVID taught us. It's because it's a virus in a province somewhere in a place that I can name. It doesn't mean that it doesn't affect you, but because it can very easily come to that point. Maybe I cannot tell you the exact path which will come there, but the world is a global village at this point, and everything is affected. The inflation, the gas prices tells you that, right? Yeah,
like the Kentucky pensioners who, when Biden implements these sanctions, lose their damn pensions. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I didn't know that.
When you look at sanctions, like, we look at it very... Like, it's very short-sighted. Like, it doesn't really curtail him, and it just hurts the Russian people. I mean, is that how many people in your region would view sanctions and economic sanctions like that?
No. There's no oil. Like, the flour went off the shelves. So everybody's... And everything is so expensive. Hmm. I feel that we are more sanctioned than Russia is at this point.
Really? Why?
Yeah, because of the... So an average salary in Macedonia is 400 euros monthly. That's $450.
Wow.
That's the only...
Who is sanctioning Macedonia?
No, I'm not saying anybody is sanctioning it. I'm saying we are as if somebody is sanctioning us just because we have the same effects just because of that situation. The gas prices, the bread prices, the food prices. And so everybody is affected, but we have a lot less to live on, right?
Mm.
But I don't think we're blaming anybody for it. It's one of those interesting times that we have to live through, I guess.
Harry, that's why China's Belt and Road investments, not military security guarantees, but investing in local countries like south of the equator, that's where it's been smart, Harry.
Yep. Doing the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, comes in and gives those cheap loans possible of security also from the Chinese government, also selling military weapons, trying to do the like pseudo world policing that the U.S. Does, you know, China tries to do like their own version of it.
Get them hooked on Chinese money. Get them hooked on Chinese currency.
Yeah, get them hooked on Chinese money. Find like your local corrupt politician. Get something like that. It's that same MO.
Reinhold, I can't have an episode where I don't let Harry rant about China.
We almost got all the way through it, and you had to toss him a nice little lob there.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for your time. It's been so great to talk to you. You know, I don't know I don't know if I agree with you totally on all this, but I do think it's interesting to hear your perspective, and it's challenging for a lot of us. So, I mean, what do you guys think, Harry Reinhold?
I think it's great information, and it's always wise to find different point of views and different experiences than what you're used to and what you see. I mean, that's the only way you can do this is just talking to people and, and getting there and understanding and listening to what they're having to say and having empathy for them. So that's how you bring about peace. There's no way you can do that without doing it. When you get to know people, it's kind of hard to hate people. But if you don't get to know them, if you kind of prejudge them or, you know, stereotype them, then it's so much easier to just dehumanize them at that point and see them as an enemy and have no problem with military action. So, like I said, this is the only way you can do that and change that process.
Harry?
Well, Anna, when you do get your podcast done, remember RSS is everywhere. Put it on the internet. Let people find you everywhere.
Hey, we're happy, even if we don't know what you're saying, to download it just to give you the download. So send me a link and I'll put it in the show notes so people can go check it out.
Yeah. I will by Monday. I'll put it out.
Okay. What I love, Harry, about what's happening lately is we're starting to see people from Russia and other places listening to the show. Anna, I'd love for you to share this, you know, and tell people in Macedonia to listen to the show. I'd love to expand our global reach. We've got Polar Knights on Twitch watching. He's from Norway, and he says he won the lottery because his mother-in-law is stuck in quarantine. Huge win. So we're always excited, and Darla, again, I don't know if you're out there watching, but we miss you, and we're sorry for offending you. All right, everybody, thank you so much for watching. Please, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and family, and just share it on your social media. I have absolutely no reach left on social media. I get maybe a dozen likes on all of my social platforms. Anna, you have been censored for talking about some of this stuff just right as you were like, hey, I think one of your followers reported me. I'm like, nah, it wasn't us. It's the global censorship happens to everybody at this point, right?
It's been crazy. Yeah, I've said something like, I don't know if I'm going to be banned for saying this. I said, Europeans are lazy and aloof, meaning European Union. And yeah, I got banned for a few days.
Well, those
and then a few days later, again, something, it's dug up something like a year ago.
That's what they do. Yeah, so Reagan went to share my post. Podcasting and Platforms has launched, podcastingandplatforms.com. Download the podcast, please. I'm teaching people how to podcast. And she was like, oh, this is great. Hey. And so she got a notice saying, are you sure you want to share this from C. Spangle on Instagram because you violated the community standards so many times? And I was like, ah, you'll be fine. 2 days later, they scan her account and ding her and say, well, she said, all Chris does is watch Hitler documentaries. Well, that was promoting violence, and so they dinged her. So because she shared my thing, it dinged her account. So I have no ability to share content anymore. So I'd really appreciate if you guys could pick up the slack and tell people about the show, because the organic reach that I once had on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, it's completely gone. I have no ability to share on this or on the We Are Libertarian stuff. Go look at our likes on our page of 100,000 people. We get one like. And it's good old Mott. Mott likes everything we post. So check that out. So this is the last vestige of independent thought, as Stephen Miller, not that Stephen Miller, says. So thanks for watching us. We really do appreciate it. And thank you to Anna for sharing your perspective. It's been awesome to hear it, and great. So thank you, and we will see you again soon.